Could we be getting the housing supply boost we need? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Americans started construction on 1.57 million homes in January. That is a seasonally adjusted number. More than expected, 20% up from January of 2019. Single-family starts hit the 1 million unit threshold for the second month in a row. Haven't been that high since the housing boom. Multifamily construction starts are up 70% from last year. Let's talk to Diane Swonk. She's chief economist at tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Hi, Diane. Good morning.
Good morning.
This sounds like we could be getting some actual movement in the housing supply. What do you think?
Yes, it is some real movement. We're getting a little extra lift from unseasonably warm winter weather. And we're finally seeing the housing market respond to low interest rates. The problem is we still have a long way to go to catch up on what was lost. And there still is a huge shortage of those entry-level single-family homes that people want to buy now.
Right, because a lot of the emphasis has been on building homes for the wealthy. That's where the money's been, and that's where the building's been for the most part, right?
Exactly. And also, we have fewer builders than we did in the past, and they could game the market in ways that they couldn't in the past, building only what they could sell rather than that speculative housing we used to see, you know, to an excess during the building boom. But we're not seeing that kind of speculative build in the single-family entry-level market where demand is strongest. And as a result, it has left, you know, the upward pressure on prices across the board. Even some of the second-tier markets where rentals, people have begun moving for more affordable reason, moving jobs there as well, off of the coast, you're seeing those markets, the rents go up much more rapidly than the actual pace of wages.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton, thanks so much. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
We are getting a glimpse of what coronavirus could do to drug prices. Acetaminophen is a painkiller. It's in things like Tylenol. The price of acetaminophen in India has surged 40% because of supply disruptions in China. This problem could get bigger. India is the world's largest exporter of generic drugs. It supplies 20% of generic drugs globally, 40% of generic drugs consumed in the U.S. Drug companies say there could come a point where that international flow of drugs is affected. Here's the BBC's Nikhil Inamdar with more from Mumbai.
They're saying that so far there's not been a supply shortage here in India, but in the event that this lockdown continues beyond the end of this month or till the beginning of March, then we could start seeing shortages of finished drugs in the market starting April. So inventories are there for the next 2 months, but beyond April, there could be a problem if things are not resolved. Having said that, there are active consultations that are happening between the government and the industry to ensure that these disruptions are minimized, and they're doing that by, let's say, ramping up domestic production or substituting imports from China with those from European raw material. At least that's the plan.
The BBC's Nikhil Inamdar. My Marketplace colleague, David Brancaccio, and some of our listeners are reading a free college-level economics textbook this winter as part of our Econ Extra Credit series. The current chapter is about what economics can do to help make laws and rules that are efficient, effective, and fair. The book highlights one fairness promotion strategy with the strange name, the Veil of Ignorance. It was conceived as a thought experiment, but David tracked down a researcher who tested this fairness device in the real world. Her name is Karen Huang, a PhD candidate at Harvard studying ethics and moral psychology. Here's David.
Help me with the metaphor. The veil in the Veil of Ignorance. It's like you think of it as like a visual barrier. So you can't see what your place in society is after you've made the change that you're contemplating.
Right. So the idea is that when we make decisions, often we're influenced by factors that would appeal to our own self-interest. Say if I have a particular status or position in society. And the idea of the veil is to remove yourself from your personal circumstances so that you can think in a more bias-free way, as if behind a veil where you're blind to who you are or you're blind to your circumstances. What would I want if I didn't know who I could be?
Oh, I see. So, like, let's say I want to put a big toll on every freeway that's currently free in America. I think that's a great idea, but I want to, is that fair? I need to put on the veil, which means I wouldn't know in this new world of tolled highways. I wouldn't know if I'm a truck driver that uses a lot of those roads or if I'm a person who might be the recipient of the revenue from the tolls. I don't know if I'm rich or poor.
Right, exactly. So the idea is to think of yourself as having a probability of being any one of the people affected by such a toll policy decision. Then you don't have any biasing information to influence your decision making. And so any self-interested bias would be removed from your decision making process.
So I think of this as a thought experiment, but you and your team studied this veil of ignorance. Does it actually work in the real world?
Yeah, so we were inspired by the veil of ignorance as conceived by John Rawls and designed a moral reasoning device for people to engage in before they're making a moral decision.
By the way, John Rawls, famous moral philosopher, could I call him that?
Yeah, exactly.
So you had two groups of people. One had access to this veil idea. The other ones didn't know about it. And you told Americans you could give $200 to one of two charities, $200, and these are Americans.
Mm-hmm.
One could pay for a charity that helped two people in the Indian subcontinent, or you could use the $200 to give to an American charity that would help just one person in the United States. Was that one of the experiments? Do I have that right?
Yeah, so when people think as if they're behind the veil of ignorance where they have an equal chance of being any one of these three people, that is, they have a 2 out of 3 chance of being the two people in India that could receive this donation, and they have a 1 out of 3 chance of being the person in the U.S., then people are more likely to say, I want the money to go to the Indian charity. And then importantly, after they go through this veil of ignorance reasoning exercise, they make a real charity donation choice where we say you have $200 and you can make a real donation to either the Indian charity or the American charity. And people who first underwent this veil of ignorance reasoning procedure compared to participants who didn't were more likely to donate that $200 to the Indian charity.
That's Karen Huang. She's a PhD candidate at Harvard and one of the authors of a published study on this veil of ignorance in action. You can join us for Econ Extra Credit, where we go back to economic basics each week. You can sign up at marketplace.org. I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.